You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. Idaho has one of the highest instances of childhood trauma in the entire United States. In fact, research shows that children in only five other states have higher rates of trauma. And currently in Idaho, if a child needs long-term care to help them heal from their trauma, whether that's behavioral or mental health, many, up to possibly 120 per year, need to be sent to out-of-state facilities to get the help they need. That's because the Gem State just doesn't have the facilities to take care of these kids. Some folks are hoping to change that. Joining us today to talk more in depth are Scott Curtis, CEO of the Idaho Youth Ranch, Dr. Kenny Bromwell, Medical Director at St. Luke's Children's Hospital, Ruth York, Executive Director of the Idaho Federation of Families, and philanthropist Dwayne Stickle. I want to welcome all of you to the program today.
Thanks, Gemma. Thank you.
And Dr. Bromwell, I'd like to begin the conversation with you because I'd like to talk about youth here in Idaho. You know, what are the issues that children are facing today? Just for an example for our listeners, in the 2019 National Survey of Children's Health, one in four Idaho high school girls experienced sexual assault. Two in five high school students suffered from depression, and one in 10 high school students attempt suicide. So Dr. Bromwell, your thoughts on these staggering statistics?
Yeah, these are very sobering, Gemma. Thanks for asking. I am afraid that our behavioral health issues, and I'm going to group everything under the umbrella of behavioral health for now, if you don't mind. Our behavioral health issues within the state of Idaho are a big challenge. The statistics that you mentioned seem to be getting slightly worse each year, both in Idaho and nationally. And we seem to be having more and more problems caring for these patients here in Idaho because of a lack of long-term resources, particularly as it relates to behavioral health. So for example, if you need counseling because you have incapacitating anxiety, you can get that both from your primary care doctor or from a behavioral health specialist within our various health systems. If you sadly become so overwhelmed that you become suicidal and you need to be admitted to the hospital and observed, you can get that taken care of as well. If you, after determination inside the hospital or with one of our local facilities, if a determination is made that you need weeks or a much longer stay in a psychiatric facility, we have to look outside the state. And that's the real problem is for the patients who need longer term care, the resources just aren't in place for long-term behavioral health needs inside the state of Idaho.
And Dr. Bromwell, those statistics that I read, that survey, as I mentioned, was done in 2019. That was before the pandemic. How do you believe kids are faring, you know, right now?
Kids are faring poorly, Gemma. I would say that the biggest problem we have had through the pandemic has not been children who have needed to be hospitalized for acute respiratory or cardiac problems from COVID, but rather from acute behavioral health problems from COVID. We have had an enormous uptick there, and all the indications are that this is going to continue, this uptick both as a society as well as this uptick from COVID by itself.
And Scott, you see this at the Idaho Youth Ranch. I would like you to talk about the kids, some of these kids that you see come through your doors. But first, for folks who aren't familiar, maybe talk a little bit about what the Youth Ranch is and how you are able to at least help children and teens currently.
Thanks, Gemma. I appreciate that. The Youth Ranch was founded in the 50s as a ranch, as a residential program for youth that were struggling. It grew from there and has had many different aspects to it. Today, we provide outpatient counseling, outpatient therapy through a center in North Idaho, as well as here in Boise and in Middleton, outpatient therapy. We have a particular modality we can use with many youth, that's equine-assisted psychotherapy. So we have a herd and stables in North Idaho, as well as here in the Treasure Valley. We also provide adoption services, a youth works program, which is about taking hard to employ young people and giving them job skills and job placements. And then we operate Hayes Shelter House, which is the only true runaway and homeless shelter for minors in the whole Treasure Valley. And last year we served 3,000 shelter nights at that facility alone for kids that otherwise would have been really either on the streets or sleeping on someone's couch or in an otherwise vulnerable spot.
And Scott, about how many youth on average do you see through the Idaho Youth Ranch when it comes to behavioral health, as you just mentioned?
Well, for behavioral health needs, and I'll include the homeless shelter, uh-huh, Hayes, in that, you know, we see about 1,000 kids a year through one of our programs or another. And many of those, actually most of those, that's, you know, multiple months of service provided to each one.
That's a big chunk of kids when you say 1,000. Ruth, I'm curious, if a family has a child that is struggling, as Scott and Dr. Bramwell both laid out for us and what that could look like, what does that process look like here in Idaho right now for the families who are trying to get their child the help that they need?
It's varies depending on the situation that the child is in and how acute or dangerous that situation is. But we have in Idaho the YES system of care. That is our youth mental health system of care. It stands for Youth Empowerment Services. It's run by the Department of Health and Welfare. And any youth under the age of 18 has a right to receive services as a result of that system and through that system. So the problem is, I think, that a lot of families don't understand that their youth has a right to that, and youth themselves don't understand that. And so finances become a barrier because people assume they will not be able to afford even just counseling as an early intervention. Dollars are tight in families and they don't know how to get to these services. So what families should do is either call the Federation of Families, trying to just let us talk them through navigating this system, or connect with the YES system directly, as it can they will do an assessment as a starting point. And depending on where that child assesses, low needs up through very extreme acute high needs, then the system can offer that family various services. Now, is it perfect? No. Do we have all the services we need in Idaho? No. We're going to talk about that more shortly. But at least there is a system in place, and that is the system that we want families to engage with.
Mm-hmm. So then, Ruth, what's it like for families then when they find out that their child may need help in a longer-term facility? What happens at that point?
Well, that is a really hard point. It's I don't think it's really a shock to the family at that point, because the family is in total disarray. They know that, mm-hmm, their home life is no longer supporting this child, and homes can even become, you know, really complex and just bad for everybody involved. So parents do need to be faced with this very unfortunate choice of having their child separated for a period of time for treatment, this longer term treatment that you're talking about. The process of getting that is complicated because we don't have centers right here in Idaho. The system can't just automatically take a child who tests out, who assesses at that level of need, and say, oh, okay, well, here's our 5 Idaho facilities. Let's see which one is closer to your home. It doesn't work like that right now. And so right now there's this very specialized process that takes time of identifying what are the places around our nation that could accept a child and what's the best match for their needs. And it's the length of time that takes when a family is already in crisis is really unfortunate at this point, which is why we need some centers here in Idaho.
So Scott, currently, does Idaho have any long-term facilities for Idaho youth?
Yeah, great question, Gemma. There are some privately run facilities, but they're not enough to meet the need. The other piece is, particularly for low-income families, they have virtually no options. There is one facility in Idaho that only has 12 beds, and most of those are filled by children from other states. So if a child is low income and is on Medicaid, the facility must be accredited. And Idaho just does not have accredited facilities that can receive kids who are on Medicaid.
Well, we need to take a quick break. We are continuing this conversation after the break, talking about next steps when it comes to long-term facility options in Idaho. Stay with us for this conversation. More Idaho Matters right now as we continue our conversation. We're going to dive into why Idaho kids are struggling more than most children in other states when it comes to trauma. We're talking about loss, adversity, assault, domestic violence, neglect. Idaho kids need help. Our panel today, Scott Curtis, he is the CEO of the Idaho Youth Ranch, Dr. Kenny Bramwell, Medical Director at St. Luke's Children's Hospital, Ruth York, Executive Director of the Idaho Federation of Families, and philanthropist Dwayne Stickle is with us as well. Dr. Bramwell, what are the gaps that you see when it comes to the need for services for Idaho's youth when we talk about behavioral health?
Yeah, thanks, Gemma. We have a problem here in Idaho for kids who need long-term care for their behavioral health issues in an institution such as the Idaho Youth Ranch or another place like it. We just don't simply have facilities where patients can stay for long-term care. And by that, I mean outside of 3 or 4 or 5 days. We have relied on neighboring states to take patients who need these types of services. And that's incredibly challenging for families who are often already struggling with the issues that go with, let's say, severe incapacitating depression of a teenage child. And then you add on that you need to go live in Salt Lake to get this care or to visit Salt Lake for a period of time while your teen is getting care there. You certainly don't need to stay there, but families often choose to be near their teenager while they're struggling to that degree. So our biggest challenge is kids who live here, who would prefer to get care here, and we just don't have the facilities, either because of space constraints and sometimes because of financial constraints, as was mentioned already.
And Scott, we did talk about those financial constraints, and what I think you said 12 spots are available when we talk about low income. So with that being said, how many Idaho kids are being sent to facilities across the country? I mean, it's nice to think maybe go to Salt Lake City, but that's not always the case. You might have to go farther away.
Yeah, that's right, Gemma. You know, many of the young people from Idaho are sent to facilities in Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Texas. They're really spread out. We don't have great information on the number of young people from Idaho whose parents are finding the resources themselves, so private pay or through their private insurance. What we do know is the kids that are being facilitated by the state, and those are the kids that are on Medicaid. And at a point in time, so right now, there are about 120 children on Idaho Medicaid dollars that are living in residential facilities outside of Idaho.
Ruth, what is it like for parents, families as a whole, both emotionally and mentally, when their child needs to be sent out of state? I mean, I'm sitting here as a mom listening to this thinking, you're right, I'd pack up and move if my kid had to do that. Yet I have the privilege to be able to do that. So many parents do not.
Right, exactly. And I have been a parent who had the privilege to do that. But I work in this because that's not what it should take, and that's not how our system should work. When you think about most families, there are multiple children involved, and there are two parents and frequently two working parents. So if suddenly you are being faced with the decision to separate your from your child, it is so hard to figure out what are we going to do about the two jobs and the other siblings involved here to try and follow our very vulnerable child who we are trying to do everything possible for right now. So these are just decisions that nobody should have to make. So the alternatives need to be more options in state, but also leading up to that very difficult point of a child needing residential care, there need to be more home and community-based services that allow children to get more intensive help while they still are at home and in their communities, so that we don't have as many children who are facing this difficult place of needing to actually go away in order to receive services. So there's just a lot of points that we really have to start working on our system in order to truly have a system that serves families and youth well.
And Scott, what do we know anything about outcomes, like long-term outcomes for these Idaho youth who have to go out of state versus, you know, if they could stay within their, you know, community, as Ruth mentioned?
That's another great question, Jem, and I appreciate asking it. And I know Ruth may be able to share some of what she knows. Unfortunately, for a lot of residential facilities, we know very little about outcomes, because most of them are privately run. We do know some, however, and we certainly know outcomes for those that are receiving Medicaid funding. And one of the things we know is that the more a family can be involved, the better the outcomes and the longer the staying power of the outcomes. You know, this is the reason why the Idaho Youth Ranch Board made the difficult decision to close the ranch that we had in Rupert, which was very remote, 12 miles on a dirt road outside of Rupert and operated for more than 60 years. But they knew they needed to get closer to a population center that families from all over the state could access. You know, as Ruth said, by the time the families get to this spot, they are really hurting. And there is a lot to work through as a family. And if their child simply is sent away to a place like Arkansas, where they get to see them very little, and 6 to 9 months later arrives back in their home, there are going to be all sorts of challenges reintegrating. There are going to be challenges regardless, right? But imagine the difference if you're able to be involved in your child's therapy on a weekly basis, if you're able to visit your child multiple times, and if there's aftercare, which is part of our program, having staff dedicated to the aftercare the family needs as they reintegrate. The data really leads toward that.
So Scott, I want to talk about then this frankly big plan that the Idaho Youth Ranch has. And this is to build a residential treatment center. You're calling it the Residential Center for Healing and Resilience. Talk about why you're doing this. I mean, I think it's frankly apparent in the conversations we've been having, but what will this look like?
Well, thanks, Gemma. And I'll tell you that part of the reason why is we put together a great group of volunteers. Ruth was on that group, along with many others with incredible expertise, and combine them with staff. And we looked around the country what the options were. What gap could Idaho Youth Ranch fill using this incredible 258-acre campus we have outside of Middleton? And what came back to us loud and clear is, as Dr. Bramwell said, there are many gaps that need to be filled. And one of the most significant that we could take on first was the residential one. So what was decided was to build a residential facility, and also to build it to the scale that could really serve the needs of the youth and families and also be sustainable long-term financially. And so there are some economies of scale. So Gemma, what's been designed, it's a $28 million project. It can handle up to 64 youth, ages 11 through 17, 64 youth in private rooms. You know, again, we looked around the country at the best programs and what they would want, because we want Idaho kids to have state of the art and the best. So again, a 64 bed facility with 24-hour nursing, a wellness center, year-round school, recreation center, dining hall. And that's not to mention all the things that this incredible campus has to offer. But I will tell you that the facilities, although they're state of the art, they are secondary. They really need to be just the conduit to the caring staff. There is nothing that is as transformative for a young person as caring relationships with adults. And that's the culture that we have to create. And the roughly 115 full-time staff that get the privilege of interacting with these youth will have to work on that culture every single day.
Mm-hmm. Dwayne, you have been sitting here patiently waiting to join the conversation. And I so appreciate that. Tell us why you decided to get involved in this project, frankly, from a philanthropic standpoint.
Well, we really knew nothing about the Youth Match about a year ago or a little more, and looked at a couple of other things we hadn't been involved with, and were overwhelmed. And it was a complete jaw dropper when we stepped into the facility here on Irving and saw how massive it is. And then you check further into and visit the ranch area, the 255 acres, and how beautiful it is. And it's all there. It was like a perfect match, a perfect facility for one of the biggest needs here in Idaho. And the question, I guess it's a win-win-win situation. And the question really should be, why would you not be involved? Why would you not contribute to this? They have so much opportunity, so much of the facility already present. It's just a perfect situation, and there's no reason not to.
And Dr. Bremwell, I mean, you know, as Dwayne talked about, you know, seeing this, as he said, you know, it was a jaw dropper. I have a feeling a lot of people may be doing that right now, listening to this conversation, because it is shocking to see that we do not have the ability to care for our kids the way they should be in this state.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with that, Gemma, other than to agree with you and to just be thrilled collectively that we are moving forward with the Idaho Youth Ranch and what they can offer our children here locally. You know, if you think about it, we have so many services that we are able to provide here, and we're able to keep families here, and we're able to give them the subspecialists and the expert care that they need. This is just a big hole. The inability that we have locally to provide residential type, longer term treatment, rather than just acute care, it is a big hole, and it's just a great step forward trying to fill this. I just can't tell you how happy this all makes me, particularly knowing what I do about how behavioral health issues seem to be getting worse every year.
Yeah. Well, when we come back, we're going to wrap up our conversation as we look at why it is so important that Idaho children get the help that they need in Idaho. More Idaho Matters next. We're continuing our conversation about Idaho youth and childhood trauma and the need for more options for behavioral health facilities in our state for these children who are suffering. Our panel today, Scott Curtis, CEO of the Idaho Youth Ranch, Dr. Kenny Bromwell, Medical Director at St. Luke's Children's Hospital, Ruth York, Executive Director of the Idaho Federation of Families, and philanthropist Dwayne Stickel. Dr. Bramwell, we've touched on this a little bit, but why is it so important that Idaho youth actually get treatment in Idaho versus going out of state?
You know, I think there are a lot of reasons behind that, Gemma. I think the most compelling reasons are, regardless of a family's financial status, if they have a child who needs this level of care, the whole family is struggling. And if they have to add in their physical distance between themselves and their teenager, or uprooting a portion of the family to go be somewhere else for a handful of months, that just adds another level of chaos to an already sort of stretched family. So the best thing and the best scenario we can come up with is finding a way to allow families to stay as intact as they can while one of their members is getting this additional help. So the ability,
The
ability to eliminate that other level of chaos into this is what I think is the most compelling reason to be excited about the development of having this here locally.
So Scott, what will kids experience at the Residential Center for Healing and Resilience once it is completed?
Well, I mentioned earlier the importance of relationships. And so the first thing they need to experience is that when families cross onto the property, it's actually a beautiful metaphor for their experience. They really have to slow down because there's a really rough stream bed that they have to cross over slowly. And it's a great metaphor for what these families are going through. Are we ready to really cross over? And are we leaving our child here? And are we gonna be able to get them back? And then while the youth are with us, that's the entire focus of the program. It's to help them grow, be healthier, tap into their resilience, overcome things they've experienced or challenges they have in their own mental health so they can cross back. So they can cross back to be with their families, cross back to be with their classmates. What they'll experience is, as I mentioned, you know, a state-of-the-art facility. They'll experience incredible therapists. They'll be able to work with them one-on-one and in a group setting. Their families will be involved, whether virtually or in person, with therapy every week that they're with us. But they'll also experience things like large muscle activity, which is so critical to mental health. And they'll experience credit recovery through the year-round school. Research shows that most young people in a program like this tend to actually lose weight, reduce their use on medications, and catch up in credits in school. I mean, all of those are valuable things that they're getting while their behavioral health issues are being treated. At the ranch, we have so many resources as well. As we mentioned, it's a 258-acre property with opportunities for animal husbandry, equine therapy, organic gardening, and so many other things that can help be therapeutic for the kids. But I want to go back to the most important thing that they and their families need to experience is high quality relationships with trained, caring adults. And that's every adult there. That's not just the therapists. That's the folks that work in the school. It's the janitorial staff and the dining hall staff and the youth specialists that are with them, 24 hours a day.
Ruth, how will the project, do you think, change the experience of parents and caregivers? I mean, Scott mentioned, I think, you know, how it will look for the kids, but how will this change for those parents?
Well, for the families that are lucky enough to have really good proximity and be very involved in person in their youth experience, I think that's huge. As a parent, you want to have some physical evidence that your child is doing okay. And I think that, you know, I understand what Scott says, and I believe it, that it's not all about the facility. But what's really nice in this case is what I wanted when my child was away in a facility was to hear what are they doing that's new and different in their life? What are they excited about? Because that's the big thing. Like, can my child get excited about something? Because this is a child who's been down or angry, and you just want to see that spark of actual childhood back in your child. And so I do think that a ranch-like environment, a beautiful natural setting, is a very healing thing. But the chance to do some new and different activities for many of these youth, or go back to activities that are good and healthy for them, I think makes a huge difference. And I think the families will take great comfort and peace in hearing that from their children. It's always difficult to just be on the parent end of this. And in Idaho, we're pretty spread out. Not every parent's going to be right there being able to see and touch their child, but they have a lot better opportunity to get there more often, for sure. And what we want is a facility that really takes seriously this building of relationship with the child so they can experience some good, healthy relationships. You know, my child came out of what I'd like to say was a functional family, but we had some crises together for various reasons. And so there is a time when there is just healing needed on all sides of the family. And that's the break that a center like the Youth Ranch can provide for the family, so that families can come back together in a healing and resilient way. So I think this offers parents something that's desperately needed here in Idaho. And that is just the chance to have more contact with a child who needs an intensive level of service.
Yeah. So Scott, you mentioned this is a $28 million undertaking. Where are you in terms of raising the money for this and the hope and the goal of having this facility up and operating?
Yeah, thanks, Gemma. And I'm really delighted to share with you that. But first of all, I want to thank Ruth and the other families that take their passion for what they've experienced and are actually hopeful. They're hopeful about making a change. So the best place we're at is that we have incredible volunteers coming together to help this project. We had incredible co-chairs of our silent campaign, and that was Robert Rebholz of AgriBeef and Mark Miller of Miller Family Holdings. They put together a cabinet and they raised $18 million quietly. So on Thursday, we went public with our campaign. And the first stage of that statewide campaign is a $4 million campaign. And I'm really pleased that Dwayne Stickle has joined us, because he has joined forces with the Tomlinson Family Foundation and the Simplot Company Foundation to match every gift up to $2 million. And that will help get us to that $4 million goal.
So Dwayne, talk to me about, deciding to contribute in this manner and doing this matching funds. Is this because, as you said, you know, your jaw dropped when you heard about what was needed for our youth?
What we heard about, and also what we saw, Jenna, and you've heard from these three, all of what they said are all the reasons. But again, I'd say they're, almost there. I mean, just trying to help them on the 5-yard line. You just need to help them across the goal. And as I say, I don't think I've seen in 40 years or 50 years here anything that had a facility so perfectly matched to a need that was so great. So the combination makes it a no-brainer, and I can't see any reason why you wouldn't support it. Hopefully the match will happen quickly and will exceed what is been pledged. So that's great, and thanks Gemma for doing this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is something that's so needed. So Scott, I'm curious, as we wrap up in the last minute, what are you looking at in terms of having the building, having this facility built and open? What is that date?
Great, Gemma. Thanks. So we broke ground last Thursday, and it's approximately an 18 to 20 month build and staffing. So we're looking at really late 2022. Being able to be in service.
I want to thank all of you so much for your time, for your passion for this, for bringing this to our attention. We will, of course, put a link to our website if you are interested in donating to this facility for Idaho youth. We have been talking with Scott Curtis, CEO of the Idaho Youth Ranch, Dr. Kenny Brumwell, Medical Director at St. Luke's Children's Hospital, Ruth York, Executive Director of the Idaho Federation of Families, and philanthropist Dwayne Stickle. Thank you all so much.
Thanks, Gemma.
More Idaho Matters next.